Hey everybody, welcome back. Welcome back. We're piling in here, the classic Zoom room pile in. Welcome, welcome. I hope everybody had an awesome time in the networking section and in the trade booths, consuming all the goodies. I know I had a couple really great conversations in the live chat. I'm so thankful for all of the employers and partners here today that are really engaging in conversation. All right, so I am here to introduce the amazing Bailey Parnell. I am just so thrilled to be your hype woman today. Thank you so much for being here. So Bailey Parnell is the founder and CEO of Skills Camp, a soft skills training company that was named one of Canada's top most 100 powerful women. Bailey is a TEDx speaker in the millions of views with over 3 million, in fact, and an award-winning digital marketer. She's a businesswoman with a talent for helping people develop the skills they need for success. Her work and expertise have been featured in Forbes, CBC, Fox, Flare Magazine, and more. Bailey did her master's in communications and culture at Ryerson University here in Ontario, with research looking into social media's impact on mental health, the results of which she presented at the World Youth Forum in Egypt and turned into her signature 5 steps towards hashtag Say Social. Thank you and warm welcome to Bailey.
Thank you very much, Shayla. You definitely are a very good hype woman. I appreciate that. All right, everyone. I'm going to share my links a couple of times right now in the chat at the beginning and then again at the end. Also share my slides and we can dive into this together. We have a quick 60 minutes together. And if I do my job correctly, this is going to go by very quickly. So I'm very certain that you're used to using Zoom, but in case you need a reminder, sometimes when there's slides, you might like side-by-side mode a little bit better. So if you go to the top right, side-by-side, so that you'll see myself on one side and the slides and whatever else I show you on the other. You can also hover over your video, click the 3 dots and rename yourself to whatever you prefer. We are also going to be using Poll Everywhere. So on another browser window or on your mobile phone, which is what I like to use, go to pollev.com/skillscamp. pollev.com/skillscamp. It'll look a little like that right now, you can see. Let's give a little test question, make sure we've got this down. Our standards have changed over the last couple of years. Hand to heart, are you wearing pajamas right now? If your question doesn't change, sometimes you just need to refresh the page. All right, 100% yes. I just took them off. Business on the top, party on the bottom, or I actually dressed myself today. You know what's funny about this is at the beginning of the pandemic, it used to be very top heavy, 100% yes. And then somewhere along the way, we all decided we should probably put on some proper pants. 44% of you, 47% of you are not allowed to stand up anymore today. Next question, what city are you joining us from today? Perth. Pembroke, nice. Elgin. Kingston, this is a question. We'll go back and forth between the first kind and this open answer style. Barry, yeah, mm-hmm. I myself am also based in Toronto. What we got here? Kingston, Ottawa. Well, nice spread. Yep. And Kemptville, maybe let's get one more new one. Smiths Falls. Carlton Place. And last question before we get really into it, one word check-in. How are you feeling right now? You know, it's been an amazing day so far. Who am I going into this session with? Jazzy. Great. Awesome. The words that get larger are the ones being answered more often. Tired. Mm-hmm. Inspired. That's good. You might be interested, over the last couple of years, the word that I'm actually used to seeing the largest on there is tired. That should be unsurprising based on what everyone's gone through over the last couple of years. Fabulous. Well, while great and happy are still pretty big on there, I'm going to move forward. Shayla gave me a wonderful introduction, so I no longer need to introduce myself. I do still own Skills Camp. We do work with a ton of organizations on building soft skills in their staff and students. And we work really in every industry and now around the world as well. So you can trust that everything I tell you today is coming from very real stories, practiced and true. If you get lost in this hour together today, it's going to be very easy to remember. There are two main sections. We're going to talk changing landscape or just change in general, and then inviting more. Changing landscape, inviting more. Changing landscape, inviting more. Those will be one of those two sections is where we're going to be today. But first, story time. I want you to imagine a very typical morning where we live, Canada. Your alarm clock goes off. So I'm just a little bit of creative visualization here. Your alarm clock goes off. You grab your phone, you turn off the alarm clock, and your sister's texted you. Fortunately, your phone already knows your typical responses. So you select one, no need to type it all out. You walk over to the kitchen, you grab your coffee, which has already been brewed on a timer. You put some bread in the toaster and you ask for your home assistant to give you your morning news, personal stock update, traffic report, and weather report for the day. Oh no. Fortunately, the robot vacuum is all ready to clean it all up. Let's fast forward. You head out to your car. It has already been warmed for you from the comfort of your home. You get in, it plays, it's already linked with your smartphone and is playing your morning music playlist. You go, you start driving to the train station. You have to get at least one more coffee. So you pull up to the coffee shop, you head inside, you go to the screens, you type in your order. Your car probably already parked itself, beep, 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 too close to that light post. You're rushing on the way to work. You catch the tail end of red light camera. You get to the train station, your car parks itself again. You tap onto the train, you go to work. Let's just stop there because we could keep going. What if I told you that in this very simple morning routine, there are already at least 20 instances of where the tech, the AI, and the automation have become an integral part of what we do every day? The alarm clock, the virtual assistant, the coffee maker, the toaster oven in and of itself is still tech, traffic reports, the red light cameras, the self-driving train, who knows, the preloaded metro card, you name it. And alongside this, there have also been a ton of jobs in just that simple morning routine that have already also been replaced by the tech, the AI, the automation, the robots, you name it. The assembly line of factory workers, the receptionists, perhaps, the farm workers and the cooks and the agricultural graders that might go into getting you that fast food. The cashiers, the dishwashers, the stock traders who maybe used to give you those stock updates, the traffic cops who used to do the red light cameras, the toll booth operators at the train station, and the list goes on. Now, this trend of the tech taking jobs that previously belonged to humans is one accentuated by the global pandemic. Just recently, PwC reported that 52% of companies accelerated their AI adoption plans in the pandemic, and that 86% of those companies said that AI became a mainstream technology in their companies for things like improving customer experiences, innovating products and services, achieving cost savings, increasing productivity, you name it. So it wasn't really a surprise then when the 2020 Future of Jobs report from the World Economic Forum estimated that by 2025, 85 million jobs would be replaced by the tech. Now, I know this is sounding very daunting right now, because what we're dealing with and what you've already heard a ton about today is change. We're dealing with massive stories of change, the change that we're about to go through in these next 5 years that is inevitable, and the change that we've just gone through in the last few years. These stories of change are all around us. And I'll give you one that's even just a little bit more local, a little bit easier, because the changes are always happening, but the reactions to change may not always be suiting us as well. So I was working with this company at Skills Camp, and they're a very large tech company that is one of the largest in the world. That's what I'll say. And a few years ago, they were moving everything to the cloud. So when they did this, they thought this would be the most amazing change. This is all pre-pandemic, so we hadn't even dealt with that yet. Seems like they made a forward-looking decision, doesn't it? So a few years ago, we're moving to the cloud, everyone. This is going to be amazing. We are going to be more eco-friendly. We're not going to have to print out all of our papers when we come to meetings. We're not going to have to send all of our docs back and forth now on Windows Docs and make sure that we have the right version. And oh, snap, you were editing the old version. And we're not going to have to do that anymore. It's going to be an amazing change. And when the leadership put this out, they thought, how could we not get a good reaction to this? What they actually got was some of the very classic negative reactions to change. And as I read through some of these, just take mental note of if you can relate to some of them over with the, either in yourself or your teams over the changes of the last couple of years. What they got was some misinterpreting or imagining the worst with this change. Hey, we're moving to the cloud. Wait, are you saying we're not going to have access to our old docs anymore? Like, I have local docs in my computer. Am I still going to have access to those? They got a lot of fear of getting it wrong and hesitancy. They got, I'm not changing until the last possible second when I'm made to. I don't know how to use it, and I have a system that works for me. They got a lot of anxiety, stress, confusion, and lower self-esteem. Wait, what's going on? Is this another thing on my plate? They got fear of asking questions or being misunderstood by their employees. Someone might say, you know, they were saying, I'm already the oldest on the team. Now I'm going to have to go through all of these other changes. Everyone's already doing it so easily, and now I'm going to look dumb. They got poor listening and making false assumptions, a classic negative reaction to change. Wait, I think they said that we're changing over in May 2022. What? That's in a couple of months, when it was actually May 2023, let's say a year later. Seizing on rumors. Wait, so everything is being taken away? Anger and resentment. This is so frustrating. Blaming. The tech team just doesn't understand what we have to deal with, and eventually distrust. Leadership doesn't understand us. They got the very classic negative reactions to change that could have been predicted and could have been mitigated. And that's a bit of what we're going to do today. Because you know what they got? They got humans if you leave them alone. Now, let me tell you what I mean by that. Naturally, people don't like change. It's actually not built into our biology. And I'll teach you a few terms here. First off, we're creatures of habit. This we know. If you leave humans alone and they find psychological safety, they will want to recreate the habit that brought them to that psychological safety. We also have this giant thing in our brain called the amygdala, which is responsible for our fight, flight, or freeze response when there's a perceived threat. This thing in our brain only goes off when there are changes or stressors, and releases cortisol, and also takes blood away from our prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for analytical thought. We don't love change naturally. There's also this term called inertia. This is the tendency for a mass to do nothing or remain unchanged. It means that if there is no motivating external factors, the natural state of a being is to remain right where you are. Similar to, say, another living being like a plant. Inertia is that we, if there's no motivating factors, positive or negative, we will stay still. And finally, homeostasis. There's a steady internal physical and chemical condition that living systems use to maintain, not to maintain innovation or change, to maintain stability. So the biology of our brain, strangely enough, wants to find us in psychological safety, a place that we know we've got it figured out. We know what the stressors are going to be. We don't even stress about them anymore. And we want to stay there. And when I've been asking people over the course of the last, geez, even pre-pandemic, what are your feelings about change? Are you scared of change? This is kind of a summation of those answers. 25% of people typically say often or all of the time. 50% say sometimes. So we have 70% of people, you know, 75% of people admitting that, yeah, I deal with the fear of change. So I'll ask you as well. Pollev.com/skillscamp again. Do you fear change? This is anonymous. Is it, how are you feeling right now? Is it all of the time? Is it most of the time? Is it occasionally, or is it never? Give you a couple seconds there. Okay. See what we got so far? Occasionally, like this. Occasionally, and eight, never. Great. We need to make sure that this gets down to your teams as well. So funny enough, we are meant, I like seeing occasionally and not all of the time. We've gone through a lot of changes and we have them coming. And for us, our businesses are need change. I mean, they have to change in order to survive. There's no doubt about that. Every business is going to, every organization in general is going to go through a typical life cycle. Intro, we find our growing pains, we reach maturity, and every business reaches a very critical inflection point where they will either decline. To be honest, almost all the businesses that were on the Fortune 500 100 years ago no longer exist. So we will either decline or we will renew. And this is a typical organizational lifestyle. And of course, there are very important things that leadership can do to make sure that we get to that place of renewal. So we have this kind of conundrum going on. The only constant seems to be constant change. Some people are good at, they don't fear it. Some people are deathly afraid of it every day. But if we leave humans alone, they will try to find balance and they will try to stay there. This is kind of in a conundrum. We need to change, but if we leave humans alone, they will likely try to stay there. It's a natural predisposition of our brain. Fortunately, we are very good at rising above our basic biology in most parts of our life. I know, it's a nice icon, isn't it? I actually found this icon first, but that was really terrifying. So I went with this instead. We're very good at rising above our basic biology. We don't live outside anymore. We figured out some food issues, you know, and we can do that here too. But one more time, our main challenge seems to be that change is inevitable and necessary for businesses to renew. The change is coming. You've learned about all these changes that are either already here or coming all throughout the day. But people don't seem to like change on a biological level. How do we get through these changes? Of course, my theory, my hypothesis is that it is soft skills. I call them soft skills, to be honest, mostly because it is the most used term that brings people to our website and most internationally recognized term. But if you ask me internally, we think these are not soft at all. We think these are the human skills, essential, the most important transferable skills that we can build in each other. The rhetoric around the future of change is often very daunting. And you'll see that I showed you the bottom of this graph at the beginning of my talk. It's often very daunting, and it is a lot of fear-based rhetoric about these changes. And I'm not going to leave you there today. What's often left out of this conversation about change, and even just about this in general, yes, 85 million jobs are set to be replaced by the AI, the tech, the automation. But what's often left out is the 97 million jobs that are estimated to be created because of all of these innovations. That's theoretically 12 million more than will be taken away. And I think to get us to that future, to get us to the future of work, we need soft skills. I'm not the only one that thinks this. The World Economic Forum report, that same one that talked about these jobs, also estimated that globally, you can go country specific, but globally, the top 15 skills that we're going to need to be successful in the economic landscape by 2025, well, 11 of the 15 are human skills. You can see them highlighted there. Things like creativity, things like resilience and stress tolerance, things like emotional intelligence, which includes empathy and self-awareness and optimism. I mean, the list really goes on. We want to be successful in this future of work. We want to navigate these changes. We need to develop soft skills, because if we don't, we're going to see a lot more of this. And just a couple of months ago, U.S. Labor Board of Statistics reported that 4 million Americans quit their jobs as of a year into the pandemic, peaking that April and remaining abnormally high for the last several months. This did not include layoffs due to the pandemic. This was purely people quitting, which you may have heard the phrase recently about, you know, the Great Resignation. This is what they're talking about. I have seen this firsthand, why people were leaving their roles. And again, not including layoffs. They were not getting flexibility from their workplaces in these changes. They were not receiving compassion from customers for the work that they've done over the last 2 years. They were burning out. And the list of soft skills goes on. If we do not address this, we're going to start losing people, not due to I wasn't making the same as I was before the pandemic, because that was all the same, wasn't it? For a lot of people. We're losing them because of the soft skills, but we can keep them with the soft skills as well. So my goal for you here today and after today is how do we not just survive through these changes, but, you know, how do we thrive through these changes? How do we actually anticipate them and get through them? How do we get through these negative reactions to change that we can anticipate and get to that renewal as our businesses? I want all of your organizations to get to renewal, and I need it. I mean, we need people to be employed and purposeful and contributing. And this is what we're doing here. All of us in our own way contributing. So how do we not just survive, but thrive in the face of change? I believe we invite more. We invite more. Now, what is she talking about? I already have a lot on my plate. Why would I invite more? It's pretty easy. It's an acronym. I invite more. To get through change, the soft skills that are most important to get us to this future of work, a human-centric workplace, I need a growth mindset. I need an optimistic mindset. I need resilience. And we are going to need each other, a bit of empathy too. Now, let me make a case for you for each of them. But as I make this case, you have to remember leadership's dual lens. Just by nature of being invited here today, I know a ton of you are business owners, but a ton of you are also leaders within companies or personal leaders affecting the work and the mood of people around you in these organizations. So you have leadership's dual lens, your LDL. As I go through each of these, you have one, as leaders, you need to learn to invite more. Absolutely. We're individuals as well. But it's not just you that needs to invite more. Because you have this dual lens, it's also your responsibility to make sure that your people know how to do this as well. Because we need our people to get to that future of work in the first place. So our dual lens, what am I doing and what am I doing for my teams? So let's start with inviting more. Let's start with the M, a mindset, a growth mindset. Beyond biology, the reasons why we fear change, some of the biggest, one, fear of the unknown. You don't know what to expect. And because of the lack of information, you've made up scary predictions of what life is going to look like post-change. And this dominates your thoughts. It creates literal stress reactions and cortisol because of the unknown. I don't know what's going to happen, so I make up scary predictions of the life post-change, which leads to also the fear of incompetence in that unknown. Do I believe that I have the skills to successfully navigate that change? Period. Maybe I don't want to embarrass myself. Maybe I think that I'm not going to be able to handle cloud technology, or why would I be fearful of it? Maybe I think that as tech and automation come, that I'm not going to be able to adapt my organization, or that I'm not going to be able to adapt in my organization. And so I fear the unknown and my incompetence in that unknown. And first off, you are not here by accident. Like, you right now watching this today are not here by accident. You are here because you have navigated the past changes in your life, and you're here because you did persist, or you wouldn't be here today. So leadership's dual lens, you need to believe that about yourself, but you also need to make your teams believe that about themselves. Growth mindset is the natural antithesis to fear of incompetence or imposter syndrome. Individuals, pretty simply, growth mindsets, which I'm certain you've heard about before, is individuals believe their talents and skills can be developed through hard work, good strategies, and input from others. Even being here today kind of shows me a little bit that you have a bit of a growth mindset, but your dual lens is making your people believe that as well. Do I believe that my talents and skills can be upgraded with feedback, hard work, you name it? The opposite of the growth mindset is often the fixed mindset. So what do they actually sound like? Where the fixed mindset might sound like, you know, failure is the limit of my abilities. When I fail at something, oh, that just means I'm not supposed to do that thing. Growth mindset is saying failure offers me opportunity to grow. I'm going to have to figure out this thing. Maybe it didn't go well the first time, but I'll have to figure it out. Where fixed mindset will say, I stick to what I know. I'll never improve. I'm either good at something or I'm not. And that's just the way that it is. The growth mindset would challenge that by saying, I learn from feedback. I try new things. There are things that I don't even know if I'm good at yet. I'm inspired by other people's success, and my mistakes help me grow. And this growth mindset is what's also going to take us through these changes into that future of work. once again, your LDL, your leadership's dual lens. Do you right now believe that your talents and skills can be developed through hard work, good strategies, and input from others, feedback? Do you believe that about yourself? That's up for you to think about right now. I'd say we're a little biased in the fact that we're in a learning situation today. This is good news. Your dual lens, though, is that do you help your teams believe this for themselves? Because they might be holding all of this fixed mindset, but as leaders here, as personal leaders, we get the chance to affect how they think about themselves. Is feedback a priority in our organizations? Do they even have the chance to get input from others? Do I give feedback properly? Do I give feedback about things that can change? Do I give suggestions for how that might change? This is how I might cultivate that growth mindset in my organization. Now, I know that some of you are doing this already, so I figured we'd do a bit of a skill share, build a bit of a brain dump. PullEV.com/skillscamp. How do you currently encourage growth mindsets in your organization? I think that some of you are already doing this. How do you currently encourage growth mindsets in your organization? Yeah, professional development initiatives, of course, coming to things like this, it just becomes a normal thing. Because I work in this space, you know, I know if your organization is doing regular and intentional professional development, you should give yourself a pat on the back because it's not happening everywhere. Like, you shouldn't take that for granted. Ask questions for feedback. Yes, is feedback a regular and normal part of how we do things here? It is not just once a year at the performance reviews, because then I have a year in between where they're not getting feedback. Do I encourage upskilling and training? Yes. Do I look for what went well and what could be improved in a project or task? Yes. Okay. So even when we do well, we think, how could this be even more amazing? Performance review process? Yep. I ask them to identify problems and solve. Once they solve them, we recognize the fact that they solved them so that they can start internalizing the fact that they're a good problem solver. I allow employees to make decisions based on the needs of the center with help. Very interesting. So I empower them to make decisions so that they will feel confident. Then I note that for them so that they will feel confident when they have to navigate these decisions in the future. Encourage staff to explore. I measure what matters. I work together to find new solutions to problems. We set goals, provide room for team to own decisions, and we normalize challenges. That's great, right? If you have a leader that's like, oh, another thing on my plate, it's such a small thing. If your leader says, oh, another thing on my plate, are you really going to want to bring a challenge to that leader? You are not. You're going to think that this is not, I have to go in ready. And when I don't feel ready, I succumb to the fears of change. Job well done. Mm-hmm. How was that communication I gave? Yeah. Potentially having informal chats, encouraging staff to get uncomfortable with the uncomfortable. I love it, team. We're starting the work. We invite more. You are already starting to invite more. The second part of inviting more is being intentional about optimism, particularly in the face of change. Now, I'm looking forward to making this case for you. Optimism is not just being a positive or negative person, which I sometimes hear it more colloquially defined. Optimism is how do you describe the changes in your life to yourself? How do you describe the changes in your business to your teams? How do you interpret the stressors? Because this one is so important, because it will change whether you have a stress reaction at all based on how you define this. It's also how you view yourself in relationship to the situations that happen to you. So now there's a lot going on this model. So let me walk you through it slowly. We're going to start at the top right. What is the difference between an optimist and a pessimist? The main point in this whole graph is that pessimists and optimists typically react oppositely in good and bad situations. So top right, a pessimist in a good situation, a good thing happens to them. Let's say you say, Bailey, this is so awesome. I loved your talk. The pessimist is going to say, this was good luck, situation specific, and temporary. You know what? You must be having a good day. It wasn't me. Situation specific. well, just because this is going well, I still have to go home and deal with the kids later. Like, oh, I can't. And temporary. Just because I did a good job in this talk, and thank you, doesn't mean that I'm going to do a good job in tomorrow. So now I have to stress about that all over again. But if you go here to the top left, the optimist in the same good time sounds the exact opposite. Same good time, they will say, this is personal, pervasive, and permanent. Oh, Bailey, I'm really loving this talk. Personal. Thank you. I did something to earn this good time that's happening. Pervasive. Oh, nice. I did a good job in the talk. How do I make this spread to other areas of my life or my business? You know what? I'm going to celebrate tonight. I'm going to have dinner with the kids and I'm going to open a bottle of champagne. Why not? Small celebration. And permanent. How do I recreate this good time or at least parts of it? Well, maybe if I'm doing a good job public speaking, you know, maybe I will volunteer for that presentation at work, or you know, maybe I will MC my friend's wedding. I'll see if this is really a skill that I can hone in my future of work. But let's flip the script. In bad times, the optimist and the pessimist sound exactly opposite. The optimist in bad times sounds quite similar to a pessimist in good times. And a pessimist in bad times sounds quite similar to the optimist in good times. So let's say, you know, Bailey, this sucks. You're really boring. An optimist in bad times would say, bad luck, situation specific, temporary. You know what? I was off today. I'm just going to have to do better next time. Like, what else is there? I'm just have to do better. Situation specific. How do I keep this contained here or in this department or on this project and not have it spread over to the other areas of my life? You know, I got to stop this because I have to go have dinner with the kids and I'm not bringing that home there and I'm not bringing my drama there over here to my team. Let's just say. And temporary. How do I prevent this bad time from happening again or at least reduce the impact on me the next time that it does? What do I need to fix so that I don't get feedback like this anymore? And last one, bottom right. In a bad time, the pessimist sounds like the optimist in good times. They think it is personal, pervasive, and permanent. This is the most stressful of them, and it is also the least effective and most scary when it comes to change, to be honest. Bailey, this talk sucks. I'm really bored. The pessimist says, this is personal. I suck. Why do I always do it this way? Pervasive. Oh, so it's going to spread. It's going to spread to other areas of my life. Like, I can't. I was going to go out tonight. I was going to have fun, but I'm not anymore. I can't. And permanence. Well, obviously I'm not a good speaker then. I'm not volunteering for that presentation at work. Oh, nope. I guess this is just not a skill that I have. Okay. The one and done. And the pessimist in bad times lives a much more stressful life. Let me give you some examples. Okay. Let's say that as you're going through these changes into the future of work, wonderful for you and your organization. You've had some growth and you say to your teams, since we've grown, you'll be collaborating with 4 new people on your team. This is a good thing. Our company's grown, 4 new people on the team. What happens? The optimist, this is a good thing, theoretically. The optimist in this time might actually sound like, amazing. We must be doing well. We're going to help a lot of people here. I wonder if there will be any new projects in my area because I've been looking to get into projects in this space. So maybe those new projects will come. Maybe the optimist will sound something like that. The pessimist might sound like, oh, great. Is this going to mean that there's just going to be more work for me? They better be easy people to work with. I cannot deal with difficult colleagues. Let me tell you, one of these people is less stressed. One of these people is more equipped to anticipate and to thrive in the face of that change that is coming. Okay, let's pretend that we had a bad change. You know, bad times, whatever. Oh, it's been a weird year. Your performance is down in the last few months. What do we actually sound like? How do we actually define this change to ourselves? The optimist might say something like, I was sick and I've been down. But you know what? I'm just going to have to do better. How can I improve this? What do I need to learn in order to not get this feedback scenario again? What will the pessimist sound like? Why does this always happen to me? I suck. Everything sucks. I'm just going to cancel my plans. I'm just going to stay in because I have to focus on this now. One of these people is less stressed. One of these people is more equipped to handle this change, even a bad change of their performance going down a little bit. And this is why we're talking optimism today. A soft skill to get you into that future of work, to get you through these changes that are coming. One of these people is less stressed. So to get through this change, that mindset will completely alter how you define the stressor and the change in the first place. So let me ask you right now, this is also anonymous, which statement do you feel you truly relate most to right now? Is it A, you're feeling optimistic and you also feel optimistic for your teams? They're giving you optimism, you're putting out optimism, we're defining that growth mindset is inherently in there. Or B, I feel optimistic right now, but I'm struggling with optimism for my teams. I feel good about the business, but they aren't quite right now. C, I am personally struggling with optimism myself, but it's easy to do for my teams. Are we there right now? So why is it so easy for me to look at them and be optimistic about their future in the company? I'm not feeling quite the same. That's totally fine. D, I'm struggling with optimism right now, now that I know the definition, but for myself and for others. Or I'm not quite sure yet. I haven't thought deeply enough about this yet. What are you relating to right now? Let's wait for a few more to come in. Let's see what we're dealing with here so far. Spread. Okay. Some of you feeling optimistic? Yeah, really, really quite a spread. Seems like the next biggest one is people struggling to do it for ourselves, but finding easy to do it for others. Isn't that so funny, eh? So now imagine if your teams are also feeling that way. Maybe your teams are also feeling like it's hard to do it for themselves, but easy to do it for others. Now, if everyone finds optimism easier to do for others, what might we facilitate so that our teams can feed off the optimism that others have for them? We might do some group learning. We might do some intentional team building together. We might, if we know our teams are struggling with that optimism right now, we might intentionally create a session. I know this sounds wild at first, but where you know the outcome will be them boosting each other up. That is it, because it's easier for them to do it for someone else, not themselves. Maybe the outcome of it is we're having a good feedback session. That's it right now. We know that we have to grow. We'll do that tomorrow. But today we're doing, what has this person done over the last couple of years that you are so grateful for? Because it's easier to do it for someone else than it is for yourself. And if you are feeling both right now, then what a gift you can give your teams. I'm feeling good. Feel good about you. What a gift I can give you. Optimism, when you do give that gift, is also inherently empowering for ourselves and for our teams. To say when this bad thing or this scary change happens, to say, you know, I play a role in what happens to me and I have control over the next outcome, that's inherently empowering. Inherently helps me align with growth mindset, inherently helps me think that I will get through these changes because I have control and I play a role in what happens to me. We invite more. We build that growth mindset. We reframe things optimistically. We try to cultivate optimism in ourselves as things happen, and we get to resilience because we, even through all of that, we're still going to face stress sometimes, of course, right? So we get to resilience. Resilience is the ability to withstand stress or the capacity to recover from a failure in life's difficulties. We know this. Ability to withstand stress and the capacity to recover from failure in life's difficulties. There are a ton of ways that you can help yourself withstand stress or that you can help your teams withstand their stress. Ton of ways. Some that you have probably heard of forever, for example, like breathing. Breathing is naturally regulated and often mindless. So you may not have known this, but to do controlled breathing, to actually think about your breath, you have to bring this part of the brain back online. The prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for analytical thought, that goes offline when in an amygdala hijack, right? Remember we talked about the amygdala pulling blood away from that part? Breathing sneaks on this part of the brain that you actually need to think through the stress. So there's probably a lot more going on there than maybe you even knew as it relates to brain psychology. Practicing optimism is overwhelmingly linked. Actually, it's overwhelmingly linked to everything good you want for yourself. Stress reduction, life satisfaction levels, happiness, you name it. So the very act of building optimism, remember, you change the definition of what stresses you out in the first place. So of course, it's a stress reduction strategy. We could spend a whole hour, full day doing stress management. This has been the most popular workshop by far over at Skills Camp over the last couple of years. Again, unsurprising. We'll give you a couple of today. I find that adults, especially busy, high-performing adults like yourselves, they forget to just take care of the basics. What happens when we get very busy? I'm not going to make lunch today. I'm just going to order in, or I'm not even going to have lunch. I'm just going to work right over it. Where even is my water? I'm not going to go to the gym. I was going to go for a walk at lunch, but I don't feel like it anymore. Or I'm going to pull an all-nighter. I'm going to wake up earlier. I'm going to stress about work in my sleep. Seems that the very first things that seem to go are the absolute basics that our prefrontal cortex needs to function and especially needs to be at peak performance. There is no peak performance in your prefrontal cortex without these things. It does not happen. It doesn't even make biological sense, really, for the brain. So that's my reminder. It might actually be an investment in the rest of your day or your week to take that walk, that 10-minute walk at lunch, or to eat that lunch, period. Find adults need a reminder of this one. You may need a reminder to take care of your energies as it relates to stress reduction and resilience. Because I just talked a lot about physical energy, so then sometimes people forget that our energies play together. Yes, physical. How healthy, tired, or dizzy am I, let's just say. But what's my emotional energy doing right now? How am I feeling? My mental energy? How am I able to focus? I may have all the time set and I have the energy, but my attention is diverted elsewhere. Spiritual energy. You can really call this one actually what you want. What it is for me is purpose. Why are you doing all of this? Sometimes this is enough to get rid of all of the rest. And you know this. Let's say you're very family motivated. And the reason why you're doing all of this is you want to provide for your family. Reconnecting with that why or that purpose might help subside the rest of the stressors because I have a reason for going through this today. Are we taking care of all of our energies? Are we reconnecting with them? So my question for you, of course, because I own a learning company, we have to do a little bit of learning here today. How are you currently filling your cup and ensuring your energies are replenished? This is going to be, again, a skill share. So if you see things that other people are sharing, you might be able to just start copying them and trying them yourself. How are you personally currently, filling your cup and ensuring your energies are replenished? That filling your cup phrase means, I can't pour in someone else's cup. I can't help them. I can't do all that if I myself am not good. If I have nothing in my cup, there's nothing to pour. Yeah, self-reflection, spending time to make me feel good. This is also a stress reduction strategy because of oxytocin. Daily exercise, great. Focus on future possibilities, also a stress reduction strategy to focus on the future. Taking a personal day, sticking to boundaries, being clear, Time with my family, taking some me time. I like that you said me time, and I don't like, we have some people have some paradigms that me time is selfish. We gotta break that paradigm, right? How can I pour in someone else's cup if my cup has nothing in it? I'm gonna be very short with my family. I'm gonna be very short with my teams. If I myself have not gotten any sleep, you understand? So it's me time is we time. It's like, it's for us. You just don't know it yet. Daily gratitude and journaling, practicing self-compassion, learning about interesting things, not work-related. Yeah. You'll note that what we're talking about today we're here under the context of work, but yes, it can also be applied to your personal life. Absolutely. Playing with my cat. Perfect stress. A coping strategy. This is our next little slide here. A stress reduction strategy is for you to define your coping strategies. And I recommend defining them in the stress sober brain. Sometimes when I hear coping mechanisms out there, people are referring to like unsustainable coping mechanisms, like alcohol. Now, do I love my wine? Yes. Do I also know that it is not a sustainable coping strategy for workplace stress? Yes. In psychology, a coping strategy is simply any strategy you use to withstand and manage stress, resilience. Some of those are sustainable, as in you can do them over and over again as many times as you want. It might actually help you. Some of them are unsustainable, as in my wine. As in if I did this over and over again all day, every day, it would no longer, I would no longer look this fresh in front of you. But it's important that you define them for you, because breathing might work for someone, but you find that taking that walk or that connection to nature, physical fitness, or doing all those things you just wrote there would be the thing for you. And that could change when you're in the day, when you're at night. It could change when you have people around, when you're alone. You have to define them for you in a stress sober brain, so that when you do get stressed and your brain is compromised, your calmest self has planned out this action plan for you. This is how we get further away from just surviving. You know, just surviving is just that ability to adapt in the face of challenging circumstances. And in this way, almost every animal we know of adapts. It rains one day, they adapt. This is not what we want for you. What I want for you is to thrive. Thriving is knowing the positive skills and strategies and routines that enable you to live that happy, fulfilling, and meaningful life. I don't want you to just adapt. I want you to be happy in that change, post-change. And you also have leadership's dual lens when you do that. Are you taking care of your own stress? That's part one. But part two is, how are you helping your teams learn to manage their stress? How are you helping others reframe their stress? Because wouldn't we all be less stressed? Our team was super calm. So it helps us, but it also helps them. And that's the lens that most of us have here today, the LDL. We invite more. The last part of more is we need each other. We want to get through these changes. We want to get into this future of work that is human-centric. We need each other and a bit of empathy to get there. We need each other. We can be each other's motivators. We could be each other's supporters, and we could be each other's comrades. And each of the other parts of more, your growth mindset can inspire others by you saying simply, hey, you know what? Yeah, we didn't hit it this quarter, but let's just talk about what we got to do for next quarter. People are going to find it very hard to react to that with a fixed mindset. Nope, we failed. Especially if you're the people leader there. It's going to be a lot harder for them. Your growth mindset can inspire others. Your optimism can inspire others. By you saying, hey, this good thing happened, Shayla, did you know that you're a really good public speaker? I think that you should volunteer for that presentation with the client next week. Your optimism about their performance in the future can inspire them. Your resilience can inspire others. You can simply open a team meeting with, what are we grateful for today? As a stress reduction strategy, it also brings on the prefrontal cortex, and you've just inspired others. We need each other. We need each other, and to connect with each other, we need empathy. We're not going so far into empathy today, but one little element of empathy I find people forget is creativity. Part of empathy is creatively imagining different possibilities for someone, like our teams. We often jump to judgment and biases about people when we can't fill in the blanks of a story. So a big piece of empathy is, I see what's going on here. If I don't have all the parts of the story, almost like we never do, which story am I choosing? For example, you know, I see, how might we creatively explain this? Oh, there's a woman, this could be my team member, could be anything. You can do this exercise literally when you walk outside today and you observe a person, okay? It's called creative explanations and empathy. See this woman? Maybe one explanation is, she's here waiting to pick up her niece from daycare. She's answering some last minute emails before her niece comes out. Okay, scratch that. Let's look at it again. Maybe, okay, they've just found out that their sister's been in the car accident. They don't know if it's bad yet. They've taken a moment aside to get the details. Okay, scratch all that. Let's look again. Oh, she's just waiting for her nail appointment. She's just bored and scrolling on social media. Because I don't know, whichever one I choose is going to, of course, change the reaction that she might get from me. If she's just waiting to pick up her niece, I might be like, oh, she must be busy. I won't bother you. No, just doing emails. But if she just found out her sister's had a car accident, you might say something like, I'm right here for you. I'll get a glass of water. Take your time. Come back to the meeting when you're done. If you're just waiting for a nail appointment, scheduling it, you name it, on social media board, I might say, how's it going? Any accounts you think I should follow? Right? I might ask unjudgmentally, truthfully. My point here is that with empathy, if I don't know, because I haven't asked you yet what you're going through, I am making up part of the story. Now, here's what leaders need to do. You need to ask yourself, am I choosing the story that best serves my connection with my team? Am I choosing the story that best serves my connection with my team? And part of your LDL or your leadership's dual lens is, okay, well, if I'm doing this to them, they're also doing this to each other. Am I facilitating connections between my teams so that they can start filling in more of the blanks for each other, so that they can start showing each other more empathy, understanding each other's resilience, helping each other build optimism and growth mindsets, inviting more together. When we do all of this, we start to invite more. We build that growth mindset. We work on our optimism. You'll see they flow into each other. We start building that resilience or stress tolerance as these changes come. And we need each other for a bit of empathy to connect with each other. We started today talking about change and how change is inevitable. And it is. There's no doubt about that. Let's make sure we have the right definition of inevitable, though. Inevitable means that something is certain to happen, that a situation is unavoidable. And yes, we know then that change is inevitable. It is absolutely certain to happen. It is absolutely unavoidable. But you are not inevitable. People forget this about themselves. You are not inevitable. There is nothing about you right now that is certain to happen just because it happened that way today. It is not unavoidable. You are not unavoidable. You are not inevitable, and your businesses don't have to be either. Your business does not have to be doomed or prescribed to what it was even 5 days ago. It's not inevitable. Though the changes are coming, you are not inevitable and your businesses don't have to be either, but only if you invite more so that those changes are not getting us over into that fear, getting us over into that fear of incompetence, so that your teams aren't falling there, even if you're not there. We invite more. To invite more, I believe, is inherently human. Inherently human-centric. We start asking ourselves questions like, how will I grow to succeed here? And my doing that for my teams too. What good can I make come of this change that's happened in this future of work journey? How will I prepare myself and my teams to handle these stressors that come? How can I rely on and support my teams in these times? To invite more is inherently human-centric. To invite more, I believe, will get us to this future, that 2025, where we have all of these soft skills active. To start now will help your teams believe that they can learn these things, period. That they can learn service orientation, that they can become more persuasive if they need to, or more creative if they need to, that they can do it. And then let's go right back to the beginning of this talk. When we start inviting more, we start getting us closer to that human-centric workplace. We have a very different morning routine, don't we? The morning routine is suddenly not focused on that tech. It's suddenly focused on how that tech makes us feel more human. Instead of I wake up to my alarm clock and, oh, my sister's texting me, I wake up not stressed and not late. I get to connect with my sister even though she lives on the other side of the country. Thank goodness. I smell that glorious cup of coffee and it tastes just as good. Good thing the coffee maker gave me extra time to relax and connect with my family. Oh, because the bread is toasting, I can sneak in a 5-minute meditation or you name it. the morning routine looks very different, doesn't it, when we invite more? The more human routine. If we invite more, I believe that inviting more in these human skills will help us thrive through the changes that are to come and get into that human-centric future of work. So what do we do? Yes, we have a changing landscape, but what are we going to do? We're going to invite more. Thank you.
Wow, Bailey, thank you so much. That was just so wonderful. Thank you for all of your incredible insights this afternoon. I am ready to invite more immediately. Thank you again. So I would like to open up. We have a few minutes to invite questions. So please feel free to engage the chat function directed to the moderator in the blue bar in your chat navigation window. Or, and in fact, my name is the selection. So C-H-E-L-A is the name you're looking for to direct a private question. Or you can go ahead and select your reactions function in the toolbar of your Zoom window to raise your hand. And if you'd like to raise your hand, I will call you off mute and you can pose your question directly to Bailey. So I'll take a few minutes to invite some questions from the audience. And this is your big chance. Well, I'm going to take the chance to pose Bailey a question because I'm not giving up this opportunity. I am an eternal optimist, and so I love the O in your more. But what I'd like to pose a question to you about, Bailey, is actually how you feel the correlation happens between optimism and sufficiency. So often when I'm walking through the world of sort of the new terms, we hear about scarcity mindset and sufficiency mindset, and then maybe even some abundance mindset. Where does this all connect for you? How can I bring those two concepts together?
I love a good philosophical question, Shayla. Like, that's what I do for fun. But no one said I was cool. So I'd say for me, optimism, like when you're saying abundance mindset and scarcity mindset, do you want to define for everybody what you mean by sufficiency mindset?
Sure, sure. So actually, these wouldn't be my thoughts. They would be of those of Lynn Twist, who wrote the book, The Soul of Money. And her three principles in scarcity mindset are there's never enough, more is always better, and that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. And then there's sufficiency mindset principles, which are I am enough or there is enough. Collaboration is prosperity, and more is only good when there's meaning.
Yeah, so I'd say off the cuff, when I think about More is only good when there's meaning. I'm liking this kind of right now when I think about like the world, because my husband and I often talk about just like resources and use of resources, how many we have. And this is kind of where you're getting into like use of resources. Scarcity would be kind of like deficit thinking, like there's not enough. Abundance would be there's more than enough for everyone. So I'm interested in this in between. For me, I think you could have sufficiency and also have optimism, because it would be, I'm having what I need right now, but that doesn't mean that I'm less than, doesn't mean that I'm in like that. If I don't have that right now, that I'm in a deficit. That's like the scarcity mindset is like thinking off the top of my head, like the scarcity mindset is very zero sum. Whereas the sufficiency mindset is like, sounds like an okayness with you can have and you can be, and I will also have and I will also be, which seems inherently optimistic to me. Like that's personal for me, pervasive, my good, like what I have is enough and it's going to spread to you, and permanence. You know, just because I have this and I give it to you doesn't mean that I'm not going to have it tomorrow. So I would say they sound inherently aligned, and it sounds like where we need to go in general as a society, like what is enough? You know, what is enough? We're always trying to get more resources and maybe not even thinking about if we actually need them or want them, or learning the hard way afterwards that we don't need them.
Oh man, I love Mike dropping a philosophical question and then having a philosopher answer it. Thank you so much for taking us there. I really appreciate that abstract question and answer.
I do too, really.
At the end of the day, you're welcome. I love thinking like that. So I appreciate everybody taking us through that ride or enjoying the ride. So thank you again, Bailey.
I know we're ending here. I just get some questions like privately about often the question with soft skills is it enough? Like, is hard skills or soft skills enough? And I would say that you should know that the skills that are transitioned out the fastest are always the hard skills, unfortunately. So while they may get you a job now, they're also the first to go. Do I have faith in certain companies, you know, desire to keep on the hard skills because it's for the good of the people over profit? I don't always have faith in all of these companies, but I do know that not these companies here. I have faith in you because you're here. So that's a very good sign. The ones that are not and who are putting profits over people, those jobs, unfortunately, like even things like coding, even jobs we once looked to that were seen as like pillars of society are starting to be automated, like doctors, like lawyers and legal, like paralegals, like these jobs we once looked to are starting to be automated. And so I would say, just with this question that's come here, you know, hard skills will get you in the door today. They'll get you in the door today. But if they're not upgraded, you know, those soft skills are what will first off encourage you to upgrade them and will keep you up there. For my leaders here, the further you rise in an organization, the less you manage things, the more you lead people. And so that is almost entirely soft skills.
Wow. And they aren't soft at all, are they?
No, we can call them human skills now that I've taken you through this.
Right? I love that. We're all ready to embrace that new terminology with you. Thank you so much, Bailey. I wish we could give you a huge applause and a standing ovation, but we will have to accept my cheerleader skills here in one-to-one. Thank you again so much. Audience, I will invite you to drop into our final remarks session by navigating to the agenda and selecting the Zoom link for the final session, which will begin immediately after this one. Thank you again so much, Bailey. Looking forward to seeing all your great stuff online. Please follow Bailey to learn more.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bailey.
Bye.